Today on Ag News Daily.
I think we get this idea in our heads of like bigger is better. And we set these sometimes unrealistic expectations for ourselves. Meeting people from all over the country and learning that like, oh, just because we don't have 500 head doesn't mean that we're not real cattle ranchers.
Here we are. Happy Friday, March 8th, 2024. The last podcast for a couple of days. I think it's due to my rock star mentality, Delaney.
That we're not having a podcast?
That's right. You know, you can kind of hear it in my voice. It's been overstrained and stressed. So I'm going to take a leave to rest my voice.
I don't think that's quite why we're doing it. You're giving the listeners far too much credit for yourself. We are getting ready to take a short little hiatus here for the launch of our new video podcast, Tanner.
That's right. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't still be able to consume the podcast on this platform that you're listening to right now. It'll still get published there. But if you want to see the video that goes along with it, we will also have that available.
That's right. We're going to be switching things up. We'll still have some daily content on our social media channels, but we're sticking to a Friday morning, Friday day. I don't know if we'll release it every morning, but every Friday morning, but a Friday podcast that'll be podcast audio, video on YouTube, and a lot of TikToks and Reels and other cool content. So we're going to be shaking things up. We're still going to be daily because we're releasing stuff, but you may not find a podcast every day, but you will find one every Friday, and you'll be able to watch along with Tanner and I, as well as our guests, on the next upcoming episodes. This is going to launch, Tanner, next March 15th, next Friday, March 15th. So listeners, mark your calendars.
That's right. And you will still be able to get the greatest headlines, the biggest headlines, the most impactful headlines here every time that this podcast does air. So still going to be a great source of ag specific news, which is probably what we should kick into today. We're going to get into the weather. Still have that winter storm warning as it is now building the system. The National Weather Service says parts of Nebraska and Wyoming are going to get warning calls. They have additional snow accumulations of up to 3 inches on top of what we talked about yesterday. Wyoming's warning also calls for 3 inches of more snow this afternoon. There could be a chance into the weekend. Several counties across the plains will have winter weather advisories as well. The bulk of Nebraska, parts of South Dakota, and other counties around the plains area could see some snow and blowing snow. Not expected to have a ton of snow accumulation, but some pockets could see up to 5 inches. So not a widespread heavy snow storm. There is a widespread warning, but not all of the area comes with a ton of accumulations. We've got wet conditions here in central Iowa, planning to be an overcast and cool day with only a high of 46. And as I look out the window right now, Delaney, it is still sprinkling.
It certainly is. And I know that folks in Texas could certainly use some of those sprinkles as well. As we continue to watch here, the Texas wildfires, the Smokehouse Creek fire in particular in the northeast panhandle of Texas, reported on Wednesday that an estimated 44% of the fire was contained after starting on February 26th. But spanning over a million acres, it is the largest in Texas history, the second largest in the nation's history, and is larger than the top 20 largest wildfires in California that we've seen here in the past 20 years. We've seen over 300 personnel, 59 fire engines, and 8 dozers have been assigned to the blaze, and they're really working hard to contain it. As far as ranchers and livestock impacted, as of Tuesday, Texas A&M is quoting that about 6,000 cattle have died, and that number continues to rise. We're also seeing, of course, a loss of grazing land, which will impact the cattle herd as well. Infrastructure damage with hundreds of miles of fencing and numerous structures and livestock handling facilities destroyed or compromised. And a lot of cattle, although maybe not dead, may have been exposed to smoke inhalation burns or stress-related ailments. We're seeing a lot of displaced cattle in particular across that stretch of Texas, but there is a lot of relief and aid efforts in the works as well. There's a couple of specific ones. 3 animal supply points have been set up through the region to help with getting hay, fencing, and feed to livestock owners that need it, and quite a few different relief funds that have been going on. But all in all, Tanner, certainly not a good situation going on down there in Texas, and we hope they get some snow or wet weather soon to help with more containment.
Yeah, it does sound like there's a lot of aid heading that direction, but it's still only going to be a small drop in the bucket for the devastation that has happened there. We do have some interesting news coming from Secretary of Ag Vilsack, stated that there is non-prime farmland in the works being used for renewable energy. By some estimates, nearly 10 million acres of solar collectors will be needed to help the U.S. meet their clean energy goals by 2050. At the same time, Vilsack announced $2.2 billion in loans and loan guarantees for rural electric cooperatives. This might be sending some mixed messages to producers. Secretary Tom Vilsack acknowledged Wednesday that the fear that this will incentivize U.S. farmland to be covered in wind turbines and solar collectors, and they are stating that this is not the goal. Energy is not to overtake prime farmland. They are encouraging the use of non-prime farmland for purposes of renewable energy. They are speaking with the natural Vilsack's been speaking with the Natural Rural Electric Cooperatives Association in their annual meeting in San Antonio, which actually my parents just got back from, that they are looking at these in renewable energy projects and examining how farming might be impacted. They are looking at a RAISE initiative. RAISE stands for the Rural and Agricultural Income and Savings from Rural Energy Initiative that is trying to help 400 farmers install small-scale wind projects to power their own operations. By some estimates, this 10 million acres could be needed by 2050 is now going to create a little bit of an issue for approval. Of course, in order to get the funding, you'll have to provide an application, and that will be the opportunity for the Electric Infrastructure Loan and Loan Guarantee Program to make sure that not prime farmland is being used. I know, Delaney, there's been a lot of conversations, at least at, across X or Twitter, about what farms are going to be put into these solar farms and what is considered prime farmland. Of course, if you farm some of these areas and it is your best farm, it may not be the best farmland in the area. So, kind of an interesting comparison as to who gets to be the judge. But I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I saw that headline this morning, so I'm glad you dug into that a little bit more for our listeners here, Tanner. But I want to dig into a carbon headline here as the South Dakota legislature on Wednesday passed a trio of bills designed to do two things: clear the way for Summit Carbon Solutions, but also protect landowners. So I was curious to learn more about how they were going to work with those two opposite sides, or in often cases, opposite sides. But under this trio of bills, the carbon pipeline operators would be required to pay a $500 access fee to survey land in counties, could collect a surcharge of up to $1 for every linear foot of pipeline constructed. The bills would also hold pipeline companies liable for damages caused by construction and require companies' plans to bury pipelines at least 4 feet deep. In addition to those couple of measures, they would also restrict the time easements are in effect to 5 years if companies are unable to acquire state permits or easements are not used. And landowners would also have the right to land survey results and the ability to stop and contest surveys as long as they go to court within 30 days of notice. This, of course, marks the latest headline here for Summit after announcing earlier this week that they had partnered with eight additional Valero ethanol facilities. But Summit said that they were very thankful for the passage of this series of bills and that the bill does protect landowner rights as well, Tanner. So, somewhat of a win-win there, hopefully, for both farmers and Summit Carbon Solutions.
Yeah, I had seen that as well. Of course, Summit seems to be leading the way in the carbon pipeline projects as of late. We have reminders coming out about the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, introducing that there could be significant changes if nothing happens to federal income and estate tax policies in 2025. So just reminding our listeners that adjusted for inflation, if nothing happens, the scheduled revert back for 2025 takes that exemption from 11.18 million that it was raised to in 2018 back down to 6.98 million for the exemption of estate tax levels per deceased person in the year 2026. The probability that this provision allows a surviving spouse to utilize that figure is only subject to change if a new extension or tax bill is created. The USDA's Economic Research Service said the expiring increased exemption would reach 13.95 million per person at the time of expiration. Consequently, that nearly cuts it in half if there is no additional works put to place. When you looked at the projected number of estates in that tax year, around 120 to 424 out of the estimated 40,000 estates would eclipse that. So quite interesting to see, Delaney, a very small percentage would eclipse that. However, if it drops back down to that lower figure, the percentage significantly increases. So we'll continue to take an eye on that to make sure that if this farm bill continues to work forward, that also could be a portion tied in there as far as discussions. Of course, large farms with gross cash farm income between $1 million and $5 million could see the largest increase in estates that are owing estate tax going from 2.8% to 7.3% if the provisions are set to expire. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. But that could cost farmers just in the 2026 year $1.2 billion in projected estate transfers. So a big deal there.
It certainly is. And while we're kind of on headlines here of larger economic impact, we've seen recently, Tanner, again, some big layoffs for ag companies. Elanco Animal Health recently announced that they're shifting from farm animal focuses to pet care focuses, which resulted in cutting about 420 jobs, or 4% of the company's global workforce. That restructuring was recently announced here during a company's earnings call that said animal health care is getting a little bit tighter on the budget, and pet care, for whatever reason, Tanner, has been an area that they've seen improved ability for growth. We also saw Grow Intelligence laid off about 60% of their staff on Friday last week and have finally faced some challenges here with funding, but it does sound like they were able to get funding in the 11th hour, and it's unclear right now if they were moving forward with that 60% layoffs. Also saw TELUS Ag slash Pro Agrica lay off a pretty good chunk of their workforce earlier this week, Tanner. So it does seem agriculture is starting to feel the pinch when we talk about the job sector and some of those monetary policies that the Federal Reserve really has been trying to push for. So certainly hope none of our listeners were part of any of those recent layoffs, but it is something to keep in mind.
It is. Well, I'm out of headlines except for an update from the Gaza region. President Joe Biden announced plans for the U.S. military to establish a temporary port along the Gaza coast to bring desperately needed humanitarian aid into the war-torn area. Speaking at a State of the Union address, Israel was right to go after the Hamas, but he also responded that they need to continue to protect civilians. He reiterated that the U.S. calls for a two-state solution to bring peace to the Middle East. The displaced Palestinians are continuing to struggle with finding food for their children and clothing. Even though the aid deliveries have been sent, at least 20 people have been considered deceased due to malnutrition and dehydration. The Hamas delegation has left Cairo after days of talks, but there's been no obvious breakthrough at this point in time. A deal appears unlikely to happen by the start of Ramadan, which is what the US has been aiming for. But that wraps up my headlines for today.
Well, Tanner, later this afternoon, well, later this morning, I should say, we have the March WASDE report coming out. And as Ted Seifert mentioned earlier this week, it shouldn't be a huge market mover. But as we approach Friday's report, corn prices have remained under some extreme bearish pressure. Going to be seeing some question marks here when it comes to South American production, and that could be the one thing that does move the markets one way or the other. We've also seen US corn shipments are up 34% from this time last year. Ethanol production is also up about 4.5% compared to this time last year, and cattle numbers are down. So those are some competing factors we might see play out here on today's WASDE report. But taking a look here at the overnights and where markets will open here on the board this morning, May corn was down 3.5 cents at 434.5. May soybeans down 1.75 cents at 1164.5. Taking a look at wheat contracts this morning, May Chicago wheat up a penny and a quarter at 529. May hard red winter wheat up a quarter of a cent at 575. And May spring wheat down a penny and a quarter at 653.5. Livestock this morning will open at a buck 88.72 in April live cattle. April feeder cattle will open at 256.30 and April lean hogs at 84.52.5. Peter, I'm super excited today to be chatting with a fellow young person in agriculture who's had a really interesting journey. So a little bit of a people behind agriculture conversation for our listeners today. Well, folks, I'm so excited for a little bit of a person behind agriculture today. And this is a mover and shaker that you want to know if you don't know her already. Joined today by Macy Hurst, a cattlewoman from Jefferson City, Missouri, but she wears lots of different hats. That's just one of many. Macy, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Macy, as I mentioned there, you wear a lot of different hats, but maybe Cattlewoman is your proudest hat. I'm not sure, but I'd love for you to give our listeners a little bit more of your background.
Yeah, for sure. So, as you mentioned, lots of hats. I always say that I have a lot of loves as far as my professional path kind of goes, but cattle are my passion. So, I'm super blessed to get to work in a lot of different areas. My day job, if you will, is I'm an account executive for Modern Litho Print Company. And so I get to work with lots of folks in and outside of the agriculture industry, which is awesome because I get to kind of build that rapport with those ag folks. But then I also get to be a representative of the ag industry to the folks that are not in the industry. And then I am a co-owner of Lady Livestock Company with my mom and my little sister. So we have that. I'm just south of Jefferson City here in Missouri. And then I also have kind of a communications business on the side that I get to work with a lot of folks in different industries as well. But the cattle thing is definitely kind of where my heart lies. I love the opportunity to meet consumers and chat with them. And I've been given so many different platforms to do that from, most recently the Trailblazer program through National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And that just, I feel like, really taught me how to be a better representative of the beef industry specifically, and how we can really do our part as farmers and ranchers to represent ourselves.
So yeah, tell our listeners a little bit about that Trailblazer program, how many get to participate and what's entailing.
Yeah, so my cohort was only the second class ever. So it's a relatively new program, but it's a checkoff funded program. They select 10 producers from across the country, and it's so neat to see the diversity of backgrounds. We have one individual in my cohort. His name's Sam. He's from Washington State, but born and raised in Mexico. And he is from the feedlot, like labor kind of industry. And then we have a gal named Paige who's awesome. She's from one of the Dakotas, and she's getting ready to graduate from vet school at K-State. And then, of course, like I'm just a cow-calf gal from mid-Missouri. And so it's so neat to kind of get to like build connections with those individuals and learn from each other. But we had a few different meetings throughout the year. We do try to do monthly Zooms where we get to dive into one topic or the other. Maybe it's cattle and their effect on the environment. Maybe it's where checkoff dollars are spent. Maybe it's something big that's happening in the news in relation to the beef industry. And so we get to learn a lot, but then we also got to travel to Denver to National Cattlemen's headquarters. And we did mock panels and media interviews in front of cameras, and really got to like dig in and put those skills to the test so that when it comes time, when our local radio station calls and says, "Hey, there's this hot topic in the news. We need to talk to a cattle rancher. Can we interview you?" Then you're prepared and you're ready to represent all your fellow cattle ranchers and producers in the industry and be a good representative, be transparent, and also just kind of adequate in terms of how you can convey that to really farmers, ranchers, and consumers. So it was such a neat experience. I learned so, so much, and it really kind of just reinforced my passion for the industry and my faith in where we're going.
Macy, I have had the pleasure of knowing you for a few years now, and the article that really sparked this is, I knew you were doing all these neat things, but Farm Progress had a great article on you just a couple of days ago, and I was so shocked to learn that you are only 25. I was thinking you were quite a few years older, but I'm curious, are other folks in the Trailblazer program kind of young folks in agriculture that are looking to make their mark?
For sure. There are lots of young people in the program, but really there's people of all ages. So I think kind of the main thing that they emphasize is like your desire to build those skills and to be kind of a, just, I feel like I keep using the word, but like a representative of the industry, right? Because so many of us are on the farms and ranches every single day, and we don't have the opportunity to, you know, go to a conference or speak to a media source or whatever that looks like. So just being able to really be good, kind of like faces of the industry. So lots of different folks, lots of diversity in that group, but then, yeah, lots of young folks. I mean, but it's so neat to see what an impact some of these young people are having in our industry. And I mean, like in our class was Tucker Brown of R.A. Brown Ranch. Like anybody who's got any type of platform or has anything to do with the seed stock business knows him. So just like seeing how much he's accomplished, and you know, he's young, and Allie Spears, another gal, and she's in Texas, and she's also, you know, big in kind of like the ag media space. And it's just so interesting to see really how profound of impacts that each individual has had on the industry. And then also when we all come together and kind of learn from each other, you know, like I don't know anything about the feedlot space. So Sam was an awesome resource to me. And Allie Fender, she's in Southwest, I'm sorry, South California near San Diego. And they do a lot of direct to consumer stuff, which my family has done a little bit of, but not at all to the scope of someone on the outskirts of San Diego. So it's been really, really interesting to just see the successes of each and every person in that group, and then also to learn from them and get to kind of bring them back home and use them not only on my farm and our farm, but be able to kind of bolster the efforts of neighboring farms and ranches if we can kind of build together as a community.
Well, I think that's a great segue, Macy, because I was curious with your Trailblazer program you just wrapped up here. You also mentioned that you and your family have Lady Livestock Co., which is a Black Angus cow-calf herd that you have registered there. How do you plan on using what you've learned from the Trailblazer program to help your family's operation?
That's a really good question. And our operation is in kind of like, I don't know if pivotal is the right word, but just like a lot of people across the country this year, we were really, really heavily affected by the drought. And so we ended up selling close to 2/3 of our herd. And in Missouri, I believe the statistic is Missouri wide, but the average head count is 36. So, you know, growing up, my family had a few hundred head of mama cows. And I was always self-conscious because I thought that was small. Like I didn't take us seriously as cattle producers. And then the more I got into the business, the more I started to build my own business. And then of course, Lady Livestock Company with my mom and sister, we kind of realized that first of all, every single operation, no matter your size, plays an important role in the beef production industry. But also I think we get this idea in our heads of like bigger is better. And we set these sometimes unrealistic expectations for ourselves. And so kind of meeting people from all over the country and learning that like, oh, just because we don't have 500 head doesn't mean that we're not real cattle ranchers. And so after our kind of big cull that we had after the drought and after we didn't get any hay this year and a lot of things that a lot of other people have faced, we're sitting at around 25 head, and that's really given us the opportunity to kind of look at what we have and say, where are we going? But it's also been a really nice opportunity to, I think, be very real. And that's something else that I've learned, that I have always been a little bit self-conscious because, like, I live in town. I have neighbors immediately on both sides of me. I work in town 40 hours a week. I love my job at Modern Litho, but, you know, I'm not on the ranch every single day. And so sometimes I have this, like, identity crisis of, like, can I call myself a cattle producer? But the reality is that same kind of circumstance applies to so many people in the industry that are contributing to beef production and cattle ranching and all of those things. And maybe it looks different. Maybe they work part-time in town, part-time in the farm. Maybe they live on the farm, but they work in town. Maybe they do ranch full-time, but all of those different people and all of those different circumstances are important to agriculture as a whole. And so just kind of understanding that every single one of us is a piece of the puzzle and that without every one of us, we don't have a complete picture of the industry.
I think that's very well said. I think there's a lot of people that would agree with you, whether it's identity within agriculture or outside of the roles. Whoever hears that message is probably going to relate very well. So if they do want to touch base with you or follow up on this conversation, what's the best way to get connected?
Yeah, I would love to connect with anyone who is passionate about these things or would even love to just learn more about them. Always happy to chat. Instagram is probably the easiest place to find me. On Instagram, you can find me at macey.hurst, macey.hurst. And then the same on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure having the conversation today.
Thanks again for having me and thanks for all you do.
There you go, listeners, wrapping up our week. Don't go too far. Come back and check out what comes out new next Friday, right, Delaney?
That's right, Tanner. Be sure to follow along with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for some behind the scenes footage of what's to come here over the next few weeks. But Tanner, with that, should we let our listeners go?
Let's let them go.